Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today, we have a ton of movies to talk about. A bunch of them in a wide release, but also some in limited release. Some pretty interesting things going out there in movie land right now. We finally are getting some traction here now that we're into the fall and we got past that whole sort of Labor Day nonsense when not a whole lot happens. But we're going to be talking about The Maze Runner, A Walk Among the Tombstones, Liam Neeson kicking butt again. This Is Where I Leave You, Kevin Smith's new film, Tusk, and The Zero Theorem, the new film by Terry Gilliam. So two very well-known directors offering a new movie into the limited release spectrum. We're also going to be talking about news in the trailer park, box office predictions, and of course the world-famous DVD roundup. But before we do that, let's talk about how to get a hold of me. You can reach me at fatguys at fatguys@themovies.com. Send me an email, or you can give me a call at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the interwebbies at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. You can also find me on Twitter at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
That's right, Ron Burgundy. Let's roll right into the news. You know, it hasn't been a huge news week for things happening. There's been a couple things that have gone on, but in terms of news, it's relatively quiet. But a couple things I want to point out. The first one is Matt Smith, who is most well known for recently playing Doctor Who, the 11th Doctor. He's going to be in the new Terminator movie. He is now set to star in Pride and Prejudice and Zombies as Mr. Collins. Now, I haven't read the book, so I don't know how important it is, but it's another role for him, which is kind of cool because David Tennant kind of dropped off the face of the earth after he did Doctor Who. And it's nice to see Matt Smith actually trying to have a full-fledged movie career. But this is something that's interesting. If you look, Peter Capaldi, who is the new Doctor Who, he was in World War Z. And now Matt Smith's going to be in Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. The only thing we can conclude from this is zombies attract Time Lords, apparently. The next thing I want to talk about is Magic Mike 2. Women went to go see because they wanted to see all the sexy dancing and the you know, Matthew McConaughey and chaps, leather chaps and everything, and Matt Bomer and Channing Tatum. But then a bunch of critics liked the movie because they thought it was a good character study. I hated it. I thought it was awful, and The girl who played in it, she's just one of the worst actresses ever. But anyways, they're making, of course, a sequel because that one made money. And Greg Jacobs, who was originally Steven Soderbergh's, I think he's his assistant director, so he's stepping up into the role of director for this one. He's come out and said this is going to be a completely different movie. Of course, because he's directing. Matthew McConaughey is also not going to be in it, which is interesting because I think he was a huge draw for a lot of the people, a lot of the women I knew. I got where they were asking, what about Matthew McConaughey? And I'm like, of course he takes his shirt off. He takes his shirt off in everything. You know, he could play a priest and you'd have him taking his shirt off. It's going to be a road trip comedy, which was what they were planning to do part of for the first one. I don't know if it's going to be a critical hit, and it might just be a softcore porn follow-up for the women who didn't get all their energies out going to see 50 Shades of Grey. Speaking of sequels, we have Paranormal Activity 5, which I always thought they actually did a Paranormal Activity 5, but apparently The Marked Ones was an offshoot or spinoff. This one's called The Ghost Dimension, which is supposed to come out next Halloween, I think. I think it was originally supposed to come out this Halloween, but then it got bumped to next Halloween. Now they've pulled it back and they're going to release it in March 2015, not in October. I don't even think this is circling the drain anymore in terms of this franchise. I think this is already down into the S snake tube on its way to your septic tank. The fact that they've waited this long to make another sequel, and it's part five and it's going to be in March, which is turning into a big month now. I mean, March 2016, I think, is going to have Superman versus Batman. So, I mean, March is no longer this time where you can just toss a movie out and hope it does well. I think the Paranormal Activity franchise has dried up. I think they've waited too long. It's just nobody cares. And it's found footage and it's going to be terrible. So let's move on. Another sequel news. We've got Matt Damon and Paul Greengrass coming back to do another Bourne movie, which is kind of cool. I thought Jeremy Renner was fine. There are some people who just did not like the fact that Jeremy Renner wasn't Matt Damon. But I mean, hey, what can you do? Although I do like Matt Damon and I like Paul Greengrass's version of the Bourne films, I gotta watch it because I gotta review it. But I'm looking forward to this. I'd like to see a crossover. I'd like to see Matt Damon and Jeremy Renner team up in this movie. I don't know if that's gonna happen. It's in development now. The last piece is Leslie Mann is set to join the Vacation remake. Why are we writing news stories about Leslie freaking Mann? She is awful. Quit trying to make her happen. She's just terrible. She was attractive like when she was in her 20s, but now she's getting shrill and annoying. And she thinks she's funny, but I don't think she is. I don't know. Somebody does too. Anyways, she's going to be in the new Vacation remake. The universe now exploded. With that sound, we're going to move into the trailer park. First one I want to highlight is The Judge, starring Robert Downey Jr. and Robert Duvall. It opens on October 10th, so it's coming up here.
You're just a boy from Indiana who's going to do whatever he has to do to pretend that's not true.
We built these walls of stone.
Stop staring. I know I look good.
Forensics found traces of blood on your dad's car. It matches the victim.
We spin these tales.
A man who kills somebody on your watch. A man you released. You don't remember hitting him.
We need to establish a firm defense.
Are you asking if you could represent me?
You can afford me.
This looks like it could be a movie where John Grisham is trying to find himself. That's what it feels like to me. What's odd about this is it's directed by David Dobkin, who's best known for doing movies like Wedding Crashers and The Change-Up and Fred Claus. I mean, his entire filmography is all comedies. And suddenly he's doing this really heavy drama. I mean, this is not a comedy. This is a heavy, unless they're not showing what the movie's really about. But I don't know. I just, this kind of reeks of trying a little too hard. I'll see it. I'll be curious to see what ends up happening with it. But this feels like it's Robert Downey Jr. saying, I don't want to play Iron Man anymore. So let me see if I can get some other part of my life going in terms of drama. I'm doing well in the Marvel movies, but can I do it outside of the Marvel Cinematic Universe? And of course, then you've got David Dobkin trying to legitimize himself as a director. I mean, I thought Wedding Crashers was good. I even like The Change-Up. I mean, I think he's a funny director, but this is him trying to be serious now. It's serious time, kids. Chill out. Serious. Anyways, The Judge opens on October 10th, so we'll be talking about that in just a couple weeks. The next trailer I want to highlight is The Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 1. Have you heard about this movie? I don't know. It's not a whole lot of news has really been made about The Hunger Games movies. Just kidding. Obviously, this is the first in the two-part climax. It opens on November 21st.
I never wanted any of this.
Miss Everdeen. It's the things we love most that destroy us.
PETA is the Capitol's weapon, the same way you're ours.
You will rescue PETA at the earliest opportunity, or you will find another Mockingjay.
This looks interesting enough, but it does have a bit of watching the trailer, of course you can't see it, but if you go to the internet and watch the trailer, especially the most recent one, it seems to have a bit of a Matrix Revolutions kind of feel to it, where it's not as good as the other ones, where it's taking place outside of the original established storyline, and or not outside, but outside of sort of like what we're used to. And the other two movies were both Hunger Gaming, and here they're the full-fledged war. I don't know. There's just something about it that doesn't, it's not really exciting me. I don't know, maybe it's just because, and I've heard that the book is pretty simple. I haven't read the book, but they've split it into two films because that's what you do now to maximize the profit. And I'm just wondering if this first film is going to be feeling too much like it's marking time. I mean, the first Harry Potter final movie, you know, Deathly Hallows 1 felt like that. But if you read the book, that's the way the book is. This one, I don't know. I just hope it doesn't feel as long and drawn out and as boring as the Twilight finale was. This looks interesting. It could go either way for me, though. We'll see. All right, that's about it. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Maze Runner and A Walk Among the Tombstones.
We'll be right back.
are with Fat Guys in the Movies and Kevin Carr. Coming back into the movie segment, we're going to start reviewing some films here. We're going to do the big ones, probably the most notable ones this weekend first. Get those out of the way, simply because it's kind of nice to have bigger movies coming out finally that maybe are going to draw an audience. The last couple weeks have been so hit or miss with the films that we've had come out. This is one that's been anticipated for a while, and the first one I want to talk about is The Maze Runner. A young man wakes up to find himself a prisoner in a mysterious maze, which he has to try to escape.
What is this place?
Welcome to the Glade.
Who put us here?
We don't know.
What's through there?
You guys can't just keep me here.
I can't let you leave.
Why won't you tell me what's out there?
That's the maze. Every morning when those doors open, the runners look for a way out. And no one has ever survived a night in the maze.
Why this is interesting is because this comes on the heels of The Hunger Games, which, of course, came on the heels of Twilight. And ever since The Hunger Games went huge and became a smash hit back in 2012, Hollywood has been struggling to try and find the next replacement because they could only stretch that series to 4 movies. And they need another one quick. And The Maze Runner is the latest version of that. Now, why this is different? This is sort of a little, it's closer to The Hunger Games than, say, something like Mortal Instruments and Percy Jackson, where it's more of a traditional adventure story. And in this one, again, assuming dystopian future, where he has to deal with this sort of this sci-fi backdrop. The other reason it's similar to The Giver is that the main character is a boy, a kid, a male. And that's significant because the ones that tend to click, Twilight, Hunger Games, have the female character. We talked about this when I reviewed The Giver, that somehow that audience seems to be more forgiving of a female character than a male character, because the girls don't want to go see the movie about the boys, and the boys don't mind seeing the movie about the girl, especially if it has a certain level of adventure to it, which I think is weirdly progressive for the younger generation that I don't even think they realize are doing it. So I think that might be a problem. It has a girl in it, but there's one girl in it, and her reason for being there is a little bit murky. I mean, aside from the fact to say, we need a girl in this movie. Ultimately, this movie is an interesting enough science fiction movie. It really feels more like it was written and cast and made for TV, because it's not a great science fiction movie. It is kind of dumbed down, and when you finally get to the full explanation of what's all happening, it doesn't give you a whole lot of answers aside from just setting yourself up for the next movie, of course. The problem with that is the world building in these science fiction films for young adult books doesn't seem to be very smartly done. And when you put it on a big screen and you ask for it to go up against all the other movies that are out there, you know, even something that's based on comic books like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, that has the whole world built, and it actually makes sense. Star Wars, it has a world that's built, and yeah, there's some simplified elements to Star Wars, but this one is incredibly simplified, to the point that I remember watching this going, well, wait, what about this? What about this? And when you watch a movie and you gotta just suspend a whole slate of questions about how things work, that's usually not does not result in the best movie out there. The other problem is it has this mystery to it. What is this maze? Who put them there? What's going on behind the scenes? But to get to that, it's a lot of them just standing around the maze. And there's some interesting things happening, and there's some action sequences, but really there's not a good explanation for it. And I kept finding myself going, okay, can we just learn to uncover things, as opposed to saying there's this around this corner, as opposed to, you know, revealing what's going on. In a lot of ways, it's that dumbed down science fiction the way Divergent was. And Hunger Games manages to skirt around a lot of that because it's a simpler premise. This is very convoluted when you finally get to what's going on. And the other thing is it's steeped with constantly defining things. The guy comes out of the maze and like, hey, Greenie, well, you're a Greenie because you're new. And this is the Glen because this is where we stay. And that's the maze. And these are runners and those are builders. And this is this and this. And these are grievers. These are the bad things that are coming after you. And they make dumb decisions and they try and gloss over them, but it doesn't hold together terribly well. Interesting enough, if it was a TV movie, I think it would be pretty good. As a theatrical feature, it's okay. So I'm going to say The Maze Runner just barely kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
All right, listening to Fat Guys in the Movies with Kevin Carr, the next film I want to talk about is A Walk Among the Tombstones. Liam Neeson stars as an ex-cop in New York City who investigates a series of kidnappings and murders.
So, what can I do for you?
Someone's kidnapped my wife. I paid them, but they killed her anyway. I want you to find the men who did this and bring them to me.
Whoever it was took your wife. Didn't just pick your name out of a hat. I've been following her. I know your schedule. I've done this before. They're going to do it again.
Okay, I'm not going to mince words. The absolute best scene in this movie is when Liam Neeson literally takes a walk among the tombstones. There was this scene that happens. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm sort of giddy. I'm like, it's kind of like when they say the name of a movie in the context of the film, especially if it's kind of hard to work that one in there. And you're like, oh, name check. And I'm like watching. I'm like, oh, he's walking among the tombstones. He's doing what the movie says is going to happen. Ultimately, this is just a kidnapping film. And it's gritty. It's at times needlessly gritty. Weirdly enough, not overtly violent, but there's a lot of stuff happening off screen and that's implied that is pretty grisly. In some ways, this might work as a 1-2 punch with The Drop from last week, where The Drop was not action filled. It did not have a whole lot of big moments on screen. It was very subdued and it was a slow burn. This is a little more overt, but it's the gritty New York cop movie and it works. He's not a cop, but he's an ex-cop. But there are some key problems with A Walk Among the Tombstone. First off, there's this whole subplot with this kid, this street kid, who he befriends and kind of takes under his wing. And weirdly enough, just like The Maze Runner, it has nonstop definitions of things. The kid's using street language and slang and terms, and he's constantly asking, well, what's that mean? What's that mean? What's and at times where it's unnecessary to have him ask what something means, just have the person say what the real word is. It's so tired anyways to have a kid to sort of warm the heart of the old grizzly detective, and it is not done effectively in this movie. There's also, it takes place in 1999, so there's this oppressive backdrop of stuff in the background and in the shots of Y2K. I don't know exactly what the purpose of that is. Change is coming. I don't know. But, you know, Y2K was 15 years ago, and it doesn't really factor into the movie. It's just, I think, trying to remind people that it's in 1999, so the cell phone technology wasn't as good, I guess. And then the ending has an interesting idea. It takes way too long to get through it. But the other biggest problem with the ending is it has, and I can't even tell you what happened because, again, I don't want to spoil it, but it has this weird narration that goes through the entire climax that is supposedly be significant, but it just comes off as incredibly pretentious and draining because you know it's going to take forever to do. Ultimately, A Walk Among the Tombstones kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. All right, I need to go to a break. When we come back, I'm going to be talking about This Is Where I Leave You and Tusk.
Oppan Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style. Oppan Gangnam Style.
Kevin Carr returning to your ears. I'm curling up in your ears and wrapping myself around your brainstem to take over your thought process so you can think like I do and see the movies that I like. If I had that power to control people's brains, would I be reviewing movies? I don't know. You know, and I've always wondered, what would you do if you had that ultimate power? It would be exhausting. Could you imagine trying to rule the world? It would be exhausting. Oh, jeez, I could barely rule the household. And I don't even know if I rule it. I think my wife would have a different say on that whole thing. Let's talk about some movies here. This Is Where I Leave You. A dysfunctional family reunites at the father's funeral where they sit Shiva for 7 days and work through their differences.
Hello.
I imagine by now you are well into the excessive facial hair phase of your depression.
It's not a good time, Wendy.
Dad's dead.
What?
Hi, sis.
Mommy.
What's different about her?
The boobs. She had a little touch-up.
Your father had one final request, and we are going to honor it.
He just wanted his kids under one roof.
So for the next 7 days, you are all grounded.
What? Oh, no. We're just sitting in an awkward silence.
This movie is fine. I'm sure that's going to end up on the DVD cover box. But this is, I've seen this movie a dozen times. It's like The Family Stone. Last year we had August Osage County, which was so bitter and just caustic. I didn't like that one. This one at least has more of the comedy drama where it has a certain warmth to the dysfunction. And these movies, I think I get a kick out of them at times because, you know, everybody goes and has family issues and, you know, you go to, and we're coming up to the holidays. So it's just a nonstop cavalcade of family events. And you know, we go to Thanksgiving and Christmas and New Year's and you see our family, you get annoyed with people and you bicker and you fight. And it's nice to see one of these movies because all that bickering and fighting happens and you're not involved in it. So it's more entertaining to watch. The thing that makes this movie work is the cast. It has a phenomenal cast. Jason Bateman, Tina Fey, Adam Driver. Adam Driver steals the show. He's been really coming on strong in the last year or so. I mean, he was in that movie, What If, and he was really good in that as a supporting role. I hear he's in a film at either New York or Toronto and has a huge buzz around it, and he won an audience award. He is a new guy. He's the guy to watch. He's going to be the new Star Wars movie. I mean, this guy actually has some real good acting chops on him, and he kind of steals the show from bigger and more experienced actors. But even then, you still got Tina Fey, you've got Jason Bateman, you got Timothy Oliphant, you've got Rose Byrne, you've got Jane Fonda, who's actually pretty good in this movie. So the actors are what makes the movie work. It's directed by Shawn Levy, who I think a lot of critics are sour on him. They just tend to not like him. I don't have a problem with Shawn Levy as a director. I mean, he's done the Night at the Museum movies, and I think those are perfectly fine. He's a very normal mainstream director. I like his stuff most of the time. Sometimes I don't. The biggest problem I have with this movie is all the big twists and turns, plot points, reveals, and shockers. The "oh my god" moments are all cliches. I mean, to the point that there are either there's shots in this, but there are shots in this movie that are drawn exactly from another movie. For example, there's a scene where Rose Byrne and Jason Bateman are laying on the ice in an ice skating rink, and it looks exactly like the poster from Eternal Sunshine in the Spotless Mind. And there's a scene in the beginning of it that is. It's so common in movies that in the movie They Came Together, which starred Amy Poehler and Paul Rudd, they spoof the scene. They make that as a joke in the movie. It's a screenplay of cliches. Now, they do a fine job with them because the actors are so good at what they do that they provide an entertaining ride. But it, like I said, it is pretty much a paint-by-numbers movie. So with that, I'm going to say that This Is Where I Leave You kind of rocks, simply because I enjoyed it, and I it didn't overstay its welcome for me, and I kind of like these dysfunctional family get-together movies. I don't know why, because I don't particularly like dysfunctional family get-togethers. But anyways, kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's move on to the next film. This is Tusk. It's Kevin Smith's latest movie. Let's go ahead and play the trailer. A crass podcaster travels to Canada to interview an eccentric old man, only to be held prisoner and experimented on.
So what happened after the boat sank?
I was alone. And then something very swift and frightening moved by me.
A walrus saved your life?
The walrus is far more evolved than any man I've ever known.
There. It'll be all right, Mr. Tusk.
Why are you doing this?
Are you really mourning your humanity?
I used to be a Kevin Smith fan back 20 years ago when he was doing Clerks and Mallrats. Didn't like Chasing Amy, but I liked his stuff in general. And then I grew up I mean, it sounds so condescending, but the thing is with Kevin Smith, he's never really grown as a filmmaker. And that was always my issue with him. He tried with Jersey Girl and it just didn't click and nobody saw it. I mean, it did okay, but it didn't do great. And I think ultimately it lost money in the theaters, but made money back in video. But Jersey Girl was a real blow to him. And he has such a low self-esteem. He curls up and goes to the safe corner. And the safe corner is the raunchy comedy, the stuff. And then when he did Zack and Mary Make a Porno, it didn't do very well. And he didn't know what to do. Now, he tried to branch out. He tried to do Cop Out, which was terrible. I give him credit for trying to do it, but it was a terrible movie. Because it was something different than what he had been doing. And he did Red State, which... There's a lot of stupidity that surrounded Red State and how he made it and how he marketed it and how he presented himself throughout it. But ultimately, Red State was a decent movie as a horror movie or as a modern thriller. And so I was curious to see Tusk because Tusk, here's the thing. It plays as a really grisly, effective, chilling body horror movie, almost in the vein of David Cronenberg from the 70s. If you remember those movies, stuff like They Came From Within and Videodrome. I mean, this is the kind of movie it is. And I was impressed, and I was getting more and more impressed as I'm watching it. I mean, the cinematography is really good, which is not always the case with Kevin Smith. The music's fantastic. It's very eerie and chilling. I mean, there's some problems with the story. I mean, his character, the podcaster, part of it is it's just too drawn from his real life, and he just needs to step outside of that sometimes. But the character's such a jerk that when bad things start happening to him, you're like, eh. The whole point of a horror movie is you have to put a likable character in a horrifying position because that's what gets you the sympathy. And he doesn't do that, and he really fumbles the characters back home. He doesn't know what... You can tell that there's a level of... He doesn't know exactly what he's doing here. But overall, for the most part, the story of this guy going to this insane man in this cabin and the things that happen to him, it's really effective until it gets to about an hour in. And then the last half hour or so of the movie just implodes into a batch of idiocy and incompetence. I mean, I walked out and I said to another critic, I said, I don't even think he knew what he was doing at that point. It just so goes off the rails. I mean, it derails and like flies into another field. It doesn't just derail and fall off the track. It just, it plows through another city. It is so out there. And there's such a tonal shift. It goes from being this real chilling, creepy body horror story to being this goofy riff on Canada. And I understand the history of it. I've never listened to the actual episode of the podcast that it's based on, but I've heard his podcast. And I'm sure he's baked out of his mind when he was doing it, because that's what he does. He's in his corner where he crawls into the raunchy comedies. Also, there's plenty of marijuana in there too. So the guy was probably high out of his mind, and he was goofing on this story and made up this really ridiculous yarn. And then when it came time to make this movie, he stumbled into a really good movie. But then he was beholden to himself to say, well, I need to make it like this ridiculous story that I came up with my high as a kite partner, Scott Mosier. And it's so bizarre, but not a good way. It goes off the rails. And I like a movie that goes off the rails at times, but this one is just, it's not in a good way. It is such a mess at the end. He really could have just stopped it like an hour in and been like, just throwing up his hand and been like, I'm done. This is all you get. You get 60 minutes of a movie, and it would have been better than this. He snatches a bad movie out of the hands of a good movie. There's so much good stuff in the beginning, and the ending is just so badly bonkers. So with that, I have to say it kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Okay. Which is a shame, because the first part is really impressive. And it's Kevin Smith. He could have been launching a new career, but it's almost like he was making a horror movie and then decided not to make a horror movie anymore. Anyways, like I said, it kind of sucks. We need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Zero Theorem, the box office, and the world-famous DVD roundup. Kevin Carr back here with Fat Guys in the Movies, leading you guys into the weekend. Let's talk about the next movie on the list, and that is The Zero Theorem. This is Terry Gilliam's latest film, His last film was The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus, which also happened to be Heath Ledger's final film. He died during the production. And this is him sort of trying to reclaim his glory days from Brazil. Let's see if it worked. In a dystopian future, a bizarre problem solver is given a task to crack the zero theorem, a puzzle meant to prove life has no meaning.
Zero theorem. All very hush-hush.
I give him 2 weeks.
Zero must be 100%.
The zero theorem is unprovable. 100%.
I think I've got a friend who might be able to help.
You have any idea what the zero theorem's all about?
Everything adds up to nothing.
What's the point?
Exactly, what's the point of anything?
We always wanted to feel different.
I have always been fascinated by Terry Gilliam. I've never been I wouldn't call myself a fan. He's done some movies that I have really quite liked. Brazil is a masterpiece. Brazil is amazing. It's depressing, and it's not always an easy to watch film. But it's a brilliant movie. It's really his Citizen Kane is what it is. And he's done some of them after that. I mean, he had this run from the mid-80s through the mid-90s where he did Brazil, he did Baron Munchausen, which was okay for what it was. It was a little bit overdone, but that's fine. And then he did movies like 12 Monkeys, and he did the Fisher King, I think, before that. 12 Monkeys, and even Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, even though that's not my favorite movie. I know a lot of people love it. It's very true to Hunter Thompson's book. Now, The Zero Theorem is sort of his return after doing movies like The Brothers Grimm and Parnassus. He's now going back to the dystopian well. And there's some brilliant stuff in this film. There's some beautiful things. There's some pretty amazing set design and sort of world building. But it's a relatively simple story. It really is. It's about this guy who's trying to solve this puzzle, and he's kind of going mad in the process, and the world's breaking down around him, and he falls in love. It's a pretty straightforward film, but it's very confusing for how straightforward it is. It kind of turns in on itself. It's kind of hard to follow at times, which is a bit Gilliam-ish. Christoph Waltz does a fine job in it. He really carries the film, but it just doesn't have... It's kind of like almost Brazil. Brazil was so sweeping and so amazing and so all-encompassing. Brazil, you really felt like you were seeing a larger world. This one, you felt like you were seeing something shot on a back lot. It had some great things to it, but it really didn't have the scope that, or even that Baron Munchausen had. Baron Munchausen has tons of scope. Time Bandits had scope from the beginning and end of time. So Zero Theorem is a neat movie, and for the Terry Gilliam fan, it's worth seeing, but it's not as strong. It's probably his best one in a while. It's better than Brothers Grimm and Parnassus, but it doesn't quite reach the level of Brazil at all, or even his more down-to-earth stuff like Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas and 12 Monkeys and Fisher King. Unfortunately, I have to say that the Zero Theorem kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. All right, you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's move on into the box office. See what last week I said the Dolphin Tale was going to make $18 million and win the weekend. I was pretty close, actually. It made almost 16. I was slightly off. What I didn't foresee was No Good Deed coming in with $24 million, which is pretty strong for that movie. Now, it was one that famously, not only did they not screen it, they pulled screenings and they didn't hold very many midnight shows, but it was going for a very targeted audience. It was going for the audience that saw movies like Obsessed, that one with Beyonce and Idris Elba. What's odd is, and I know this guy, I know Scott Mendelson, who works for Forbes, he pointed out, he's like, well, this is actually kind of a good trend because it was a movie that was made... Originally, the main character, the main guy, was not supposed to be a black guy. And I don't know if the woman was supposed to be black, but Taraji Henson was in that. And then they got Idris Elba. They just happened to settle on Idris Elba during the casting process. And he says, it's nice to see a black actor, because he's British. It's nice to see a black actor get a role that's not meant to be a black guy. And that's cool. But the thing is, it just turned into a targeted the black audience film. And that's fine, and that's a good marketing strategy, and that did the movie well. I do think it's going to drop like a stone this weekend. simply because everybody who wanted to go see it went and saw it already. And it did well. It was profitable. But yeah, it did. $24 million. Good job. Wow. Good. No Good Deed did phenomenally well. Dolphin Tale made $16 million. The Drop did okay with $4 million. You're into limited release stuff at that point. Guardians of the Galaxy, the big news is it cracked the $300 million barrier. And it's in the $600 million worldwide. It's I don't know if it's going to reach the level that Captain America did. I don't know if it's going to get in the $700 million. But this is fantastic. This is I've said this before. It's done just as well as Iron Man, and Iron Man 2 did. So those numbers are solid. This week, you know what? I'm going to go out on a limb and say $20 million for The Maze Runner. I think some people are saying it's tracking about $30 million, but I don't think it's going to make those numbers. Considering how these non-tentpole young adult films are doing, and especially in this year with the trends that we're seeing in 2014, I do not expect it to do as well as it's been tracking. So $20 million is good. No Good Deed is going to drop under that. I mean, it'll probably make $12 million this weekend. But I think of the new movies, Maze Runner will probably win. All right, with that sound, that means it's time to roll into the world-famous DVD Roundup. There's actually a ton of DVDs and Blu-rays, not necessarily the movies themselves, although there's a bunch of catalog releases I'm not going to go over. All of the stuff is back-ended into television because, of course, you've got the new television season starting, so they're dropping all the old last year's episodes so you can catch up on them. But let's go through the regular ones. First of all, you've got Godzilla, which I think plays better knowing that they're not going to show Godzilla all that much in the movie. And it is irritating because there's one special feature where Gareth Edwards is like, oh, I cut away to the TV. Isn't that great? You're not supposed to do that, but I did. Ha ha ha. And I'm like, you're an idiot. You're incompetent making some decisions on this film. You made a good movie, but you could have made a great movie. And you kind of fumbled this. You could have made a fantastic film, a Godzilla film, and it's okay. And Godzilla looks great. And when Godzilla is actually battling the Mutos, it's awesome. But there's so little of that. And then the human characters are so one-dimensional. And that's because he did Monsters. He basically did the Monsters version of Godzilla. If you've seen Monsters, it's not about the monsters as much as people trying to avoid the monsters. Now, that one has some interesting characters to it, but this one didn't. But it's still worth seeing. It looks great on Blu-ray. I mean, it's worth checking out. It's worth seeing again. And if you haven't seen it, it's worth checking out because it plays well at home. But, you know, it makes me remember how good it looked in the IMAX, at least. There's also Think Like a Man 2 with Kevin Hart and the rest. It was pretty much a Kevin Hart movie by the time this one was made. Still, I thought this was funny. It was clever. I like Tim Story as a director. I think he does some decent stuff. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the 40th anniversary edition. This is, of course, the remastered version where they went back to the original, the 16mm negative, and they gave a 4K restoration. And it looks good. I mean, there's only so much you can do because it's a grainy footage film anyways. I mean, going 4K from a 16mm seems a bit overkill to me. They do overdo the sound a bit in this cut because part of the charm, I guess, I don't know if that's the right word for it. Part of the charm of the original Texas Chainsaw releases was it was just so gritty and noisy and the soundtrack was bad, and that kind of made it even kind of scarier at times. There's also Ghostbusters 1 and 2 on Blu-ray. You can get that in a box set. Now the TV, tons of stuff. You got South Park season 17. That's a good show. It may be running the end of it. It might be running out of steam, but it's definitely worth checking out. That one, there's About a Boy, which is not a bad little show. It stars David Walton, I think. He had a bit part in New Girl as the perfect doctor boyfriend for her. It's based on the same source material that the movie was, and it's cute. It overdoes the premise a little too much. Once we get through the premise, it's a cute show about a single guy who lives next to a single mom with her son, and he kind of bonds with them. There's Grimm season 3, which looks good on Blu-ray. I got the Blu-ray. It's an okay show. It's fantasy creatures. I believe it airs on Fox. The Big Bang Theory season 7 is out. There's also Castle season 6, Hawaii 5-0 season 4, Hannibal season 2, Arrow Season 2, and Sleepy Hollow Season 1. All these are out, and some are going probably straight to some streaming services, so you can check those as well. But if you want to get the DVDs and Blu-rays, you can binge watch last year's shows before the new shows start in a couple weeks. The stinker of the week is The Fault in Our Stars. That's right, I did not forget about that one. It was terrible and button pushy, and it glorifies and romanticizes cancer, which I think is kind of irresponsible. But there you go. I need to go now. My time is up. Next week, we're going to be talking about The Box Trolls and The Equalizer. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.